So our parable today is a little hard to take. It's one that a lot of preachers won't touch with a 10-foot pole. And believe me, the Exodus reading today and the golden calf were looking pretty good when I was starting to prepare for this. Because in this parable, it seems unjust if we are to believe that God is the king in this story, that God is an unforgiving and harsh God. In seminary, I took a parables class, and we read this parable and studied it, and one of my classmates blurted out, "Can't we just talk about the Christmas Jesus? I like that one so much better." The story on the surface seems to run counter with good news Jesus, the Jesus that brings hope and love. But if we put this parable into context and dig deeper, we might uncover something more. First of all, like the previous week's Gospels, Jesus is telling this parable to the chief priests and elders of the temple. Jesus has made them very angry because he is telling them through stories that they have been wrong, and nobody wants to hear that they've been wrong. They think that they have the moral high ground, but they don't, because they have not heeded God's call to come to the banquet to believe. Secondly, the community in which the Gospel of Matthew was written was facing certain challenges, and like people throughout all of the ages, challenges in which good folks were waiting for justice to come, for people to believe, for corrupt in power to be found out for who they really were. In this difficult, seemingly harsh parable of vengeance, there is plenty of hope, however. The king invites regular folk into the banquet, people who would never have had an invitation to such a lavish party. He includes the little guy, the outcasts, the commoners, to be just as important as the elite. He elevates the status of the lowly. Of course, what follows is especially difficult because that's the part of the story in which one of the guests is not wearing the right garment, and he gets not only just kicked out, but way out to the place where the Gospel of Matthew likes to put bad people, where there's wailing and gnashing of teeth. And as listeners of this tale, modern listeners, we kind of feel bad for the poor schmuck that gets booted out for not wearing the right clothes. But in first century Hellenistic community that gave us the Gospel of Matthew, they would have recognized that this guy probably represented not just one of the regular folk, but an imposter, someone trying to sneak into the party that was dangerous or harmful for the community. They didn't want a wolf, in sheep's clothing to hide in their numbers to harm their flock. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and one of my favorite is This American Life. I don't know if you've ever listened to it, but I got a wave out there. But last year, I listened to This American Life, and one of the stories was by this writer named Lindy West, and she is a writer that writes for GQ and Jezebel and The Guardian, and she writes a lot of really edgy articles. And she talked about over the years how she's been abused by internet trolls with horrible and threatening language in the comments after her articles. One of these trolls went so far as to make a fake Twitter account in the name of her dead father and use his picture. And it was really cruel and random and very hurtful to her. Because there aren't any laws really to protect writers from trolls that comment in violent ways. There's no internet police or judge. So So she said that she just has to keep believing that one day they will reap what they sow. When will these trolls realize what they're doing is wrong? When will moral justice be served? This week unfolded the disturbing story of Harvey Weinstein, the movie mogul and billionaire, who supposedly for years has been using his power and influence to intimidate and assault women in the movie business. The hardest part of this revelation is how long it's been going on and how many people knew about it. Probably hundreds of people knew and felt powerless to change what was going on or his behavior. All of Mr. Weinstein's accusers have been waiting for decades, apparently, for the day when this guy would be found out, when justice would come. And although the story's not over yet, we still hope that justice will rain down, because we all want good to triumph over evil. The law of justice is a foundational belief that is in all great spiritual traditions of the world. In Eastern religions, it's known as karma. In Hebrew scriptures, God promised that those who follow God's commandment will experience blessings and that judgments will befall those that do wrong. Sinful actions were to be repaid in direct proportion to the violation of the law. Jesus is telling in this parable of what we really ought to call the parable of the wedding crasher. Is perhaps he's hinting that justice will come to those that have been waiting for it for so long. But that justice is divinely measured. It's not our job to enact it on others. This parable may function on several levels then, as bad news to the status quo, as good news to the marginalized, and as assurance that God has our backs. It's not our role to take up the mantle of violence for the sake of justice. We believe that one day God will provide a reckoning. Nobody knew this more than Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He was inspired not only by his Christian faith, but by the peaceful teachings of Mahatma Gandhi, and led a nonviolent movement seeking equality for all. Other groups advocated for civil rights by any means necessary, including violence. But King used the power of words and acts of nonviolent resistance and civil disobedience to achieve seemingly impossible goals. He campaigned against poverty and war, all without violence or vengeance. And he fought to shine a light on the hundreds of years of injustice that happened in America right under our noses. Instead of taking matters into his own hands with violence, he advocated for forgiveness, knowing that one day God would right the wrongs and we would all get to the promised land. He said, "The greatness of our God lies in the fact that God is both tough-minded and tender-hearted. God expresses his tough-mindedness in his justice and wrath, and his tender-heartedness in his love and grace. On one hand, God is a God of justice who punished Israel for her wayward deeds, and on the other hand, he's a forgiving father whose heart was filled with unutterable joy when the prodigal son returned home." This parable today is hard because we so often take it out of context. We so often forget about the rest of God's nature, that of forgiveness. So we hear the story describing divine judgment with gnashing of teeth. But that is not the final word. God does not stop with punishment. He doesn't stop in that place of darkness. He sticks with all of us, even the miserable offenders, as the old prayer book language used to say, to transform us, even the worst of us, through forgiveness, grace, mercy, and love. Jesus, nailed to a cross, forgave the people that put him there. In 2 Corinthians, Paul says that we are being transformed into God's image from one degree of glory to another. Even Hollywood moguls and internet trolls and wedding crashers in wolves' clothing will continue to be a project for our loving Creator. The outer darkness does not have to be a final destination, because God gives us chance after chance to be the people that He wants us to be. And those of us that got a free pass to the banquet must try to trust God's mercy and God's justice that will happen in God's time. Interestingly, the story that I told you about the writer who was virtually stalked by an online predator internet troll received an apology from the guy that pretended to be her dead father on Twitter. He confessed that he felt guilty and tried to make it right with her through several gestures that were caring and contrite. And although we don't see that kind of apology or that kind of justice in our own lifetimes, it doesn't mean that God has quit doing what God does best, calling all of us to the banquet. God never tires, never fails, never gives up on any of us. And for the sinners that we humans have given up on a long time ago, God keeps tickets to the banquet at the will call window. And there's always a few extra seats at the table waiting to be filled.